Hello and welcome to the DeFi Daily, a 10-minute or less DeFi and crypto update. I'm Amy here with Pat, and today is Monday, August 24th, 2020. You can check us out on Twitter at the DeFi Daily or check us out online at thedefidaily.com. As always, thank you to our sponsor, Bitwave. Bitwave is a DeFi investment and digital asset management platform that does allocation monitoring, token tax tracking, gain loss reporting, and more. You can check them out online at bitwave.io or on Twitter at Bitwave Platform. Okay, first, Pat, let's talk about Curve. So Curve DeFi protocol recently carried out its first governance vote, though that seems to have raised some questions as the founder has a 71% majority controlling the voting power. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, Curve has a really interesting governance model. The high level is that you can actually lock up your coins for longer to get more, to gain more votes. So it's a way of essentially trading control of your coins for control of the protocol. Now, what happened was that the founder of Curve noticed that someone had essentially taken over 51, had put together a stake where they had 51% voting rights and kind of freaked out a little bit, I think, is sort of the general consensus at this point, both from the community at large, but also from some statements that he and Curve themselves made. So he more or less freaked out, thinking that there was some sort of attack on the coin, and maybe there was, I'm not sure we can really tell, and decided to stake, basically took all a bunch of the coins he controlled, staked up, and took over 71% of the voting rights for the governance model. Today on the show, we're talking about two different governance issues, one on Curve, one on Ethereum. They're both somewhat related. I mean, the whole idea of cryptocurrency and a decentralized finance is you need to have new and novel ways of controlling governance within these structures. So, you know, traditionally there would be a centralized organization with a CEO and a board of directors who would make decisions about governance. They would choose what features to develop and what things to do next. In the DeFi world, that doesn't exist. So everyone's playing around with new ways of doing governance. This is an example of an attack on a new protocol. And this was an attack from an existing investor in it. And then, in fact, the person who started it. So, you know, I think that this just sort of tells you there's a lot to be understood about governance models. I always like to say that governance coins themselves don't tend to have a lot of value. Maybe this is an example of where they do have value. If you really believe in Curve, and one of the things they were voting on was a new pool that Curve was going to be exposing. If you really believe in Curve and you take it seriously, the growth of Curve, the expansion of the protocol, and you think it would be an issue for them not to add that pool, and you think that by not adding that pool, they would decrease the usefulness of the coin, which would in turn lead to the decrease in the price, then maybe you can make a very strong argument for value in these governance tokens. But at the same time, you know, you can make a very strong argument that this was sort of a unnecessary amount of complexity for what really should be a very centralized issue at this point. There's no one else doing development. It's only this guy and a few of his cohorts. So I don't know. It's a really interesting issue. It showed some seams in the DeFi crack, and it shows some cracks in the overall DeFi foundation that there is a lot of issues here. And just like you had 51% attacks against traditional cryptocurrencies, we talked about Ethereum Classic last week having 51% attack against it. This is a form of a 51% attack against a DeFi protocol. So just because a DeFi protocol is running on a secure blockchain like Ethereum, that would not traditionally be exposed to 51% attacks. The fact that they have built governance modules on top of that has in fact now exposed these coins to 51% attacks if someone so chose. So you could see, you know, this is the beginning of understanding tokenomics for DeFi protocols. And I don't think we have any idea where this is going to go. There's a lot to learn here.
Great. And Curve, just so you know, is the third largest DeFi protocol with a total value locked of $1.1 billion.
Yeah, although their price is way down from their high. Their price is down to about $2 a coin right now.
Yeah. All right. So next, a new proposal to reduce the inflation rate on the Ethereum network is facing criticism from the mining community. Some miners are saying that the token investors may be more interested in making money off their holdings than securing the network.
Yeah. So it's the exact same issue. I mean, when you decrease the reward, The argument goes, as you decrease the reward for mining, you essentially move towards centralizing mining. You disincentivize mining, which means that you have to, in order to be highly incentivized to mine, you're looking for reasons to do it, which could involve 51% attacks against the network. So you never want to do things, traditionally you don't want to do things to disincentivize the network, especially not this harshly. This is really interesting as a contrast between Ethereum and Bitcoin. You know, Bitcoin was designed from the very beginning as a hedge against really central banks. This is, you know, the libertarian aspect of Bitcoin was very much about protecting themselves against central banks and overreach by governments. And so it actually had deflation. Deflation was, in fact, a central tenet of Bitcoin from the very beginning. It was always designed to have 21 million coins. There was a very clear deflationary schedule like laid out that said, you know, after this many blocks was mined, it would have the rate. So it started out at 50 Bitcoin per block, and then it went down to 25, and then it went down to 12.5, where we are now, and it's going down to, or where we were, and now it's at 6.25, keeps on going down. Ethereum did not approach it that way. Ethereum didn't come in, you know, actually it was one of the things that Vitalik was, you know, originally caused him to branch off from Bitcoin was that he was not as interested in the libertarian, anarcho-capitalistic foundations of Bitcoin. He was a lot more interested in this foundational concept of a worldwide computer programmable currency. And so you can see that kind of manifesting here is that there really wasn't a clear plan early on for Ethereum on how they should do deflation and how they should have the mining blocks. And so really every time they've made a decrease in the block size and the mining reward for Ethereum. And in fact, this is not with Ethereum, it's not even that simple because they've gone through a couple different iterations of rewards. One of the issues with Ethereum, the way it works, is you have these things called orphan blocks. They call them uncle blocks, but it's where two people were doing really hard work mining a particular block. One ended up winning, one ended up losing. They, in Bitcoin, whoever lost, whoever was not selected, if you transmit both blocks at the same time, whichever block was not selected doesn't win anything. It just sort of gets forgotten and all that mining hash power was wasted. In Ethereum, when two people actually push a block out at the same time, you actually get rewarded for that, regardless of whether your block was chosen as part of the main blockchain or not. So there's this whole foundational issue starting from that point on, where that was part of one of the Ethereum, the EIPs, the improvement protocols, that they more or less, getting back to governance, the miners, but really consensus and Vitalik and a few of the other people really deeply involved in Ethereum made that decision for the overall community. I wouldn't call it a 51% attack, but it certainly was something that you would not necessarily expect if your interest was in creating a deflationary currency. So a currency that would increase in value as other currencies around it inflated. And so this is sort of one more example of that. Is that it's, you know, this is, or I guess you call this a knock-on effect of, it would have been nice if they had just defined a really clear inflationary schedule or deflationary schedule over the, for the next, you know, 150 years like Bitcoin did. And it had like very gradually scaled down where they started having it every 4 years like Bitcoin does. But because they didn't do that, you have one camp here, which looks at Ethereum with an issue, which is that Ethereum essentially is a forever inflating currency because they did not have this drive towards zero new coins being produced at some point. The idea eventually was for Bitcoin is eventually you have zero new coins being produced from the block reward, but you'll have a very robust fee ecosystem. Now, what's happened with Ethereum is there actually is an incredibly robust fee ecosystem. And so you can make the argument, and I think people are doing this, that because there's such a robust fee ecosystem, perhaps you can look at deflating the actual the amount of coins being minted. And in a lot of ways, that will help. That the less coins that go out. A lot of the ways miners pay for their services is that they essentially run a miner. The miner uses electricity. They get coins in return for running that miner, and they immediately turn around and sell those coins to pay for the electricity they just used. Well, if you get rid of half the coins that they are rewarded for their mining, then in fact, you have removed a very large downward pressure on the price of Ethereum, which is miners selling their coins. And so people who care deeply about the price will tend to say that decreasing the amount of coins coming out is in fact fact, good for the price because it means that miners will be selling less coins. But people who care, but that the corollary of that is that they will be disincentivized to mine, which essentially opens the network for 51% attacks, like we saw with Ethereum Classic. So it's a balancing act, and it's a really interesting set of incentives that you're trying to balance here.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, we're coming up to 10 minutes, so let's just touch on the numbers briefly. We mentioned Bitcoin and ETH just now, so I'll tell you ETH is back up over 400, trading today at 403, and Bitcoin prices are pretty steady at $11,705 last I looked. Those numbers were coming from CoinMarketCap. All right, everyone, thank you so much for listening to the DeFi Daily. Have a good one.
Have a good one.